Dang it. What was I saying? The human dongle.
Oh, get your finger out of my eye.
Way better now that you've stopped touching it.
Yes, I was...
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
All right, are you ready?
Let's do it. Shazam! Oh, I got a smudge there. Let me just get it off. Okay.
Go. Welcome back to Okla Said. It is the official Okla Ed podcast. We are so excited to be back. Man,
Yes?
I really like meeting with you, but I'm finding a hard time meeting with you. Like, I really enjoy these conversations, but I have to push you off sometimes. And I apologize for that, Scott.
You know, we all have things in our life that come up that make us regret some of the decisions we've made. So, if you would be interested in co-hosting the Okla Said podcast.
That's fine. Anyway, this week we are talking about reimagining discipline, and our host for the Twitter chat was Seth Meyer, and he is awesome.
Yeah, he'd be one of those guys I would work for.
Yeah, well, and I just want to like sit with him and have a beer because
you can't say beer in Oklahoma. Because we don't do that kind of stuff.
No, we now we do it in the grocery store and the gas station and the everywhere.
There's gonna be one of them lawsuits because we cannot sell beer in a grocery store.
All I'm saying is this guy's funny.
Yeah,
he's hilarious.
I like Seth a lot.
And my friend Annie Beck endorses him, so that's gonna speak for a few things too.
They got the Ann Beck endorsement. Watch out.
Yeah.
Well, and we should also say before we get too far into this, we will have a live Okla Said, folks, coming up November 29th. So,
and that's going to be at OTA Encyclomedia. So right. If you that's haven't right. already gotten your application filled out for admission, do so.
Yes, please do that. And I probably would. It's not like they've got little guards at the door. So if you were to show up and just come to our session so that we can have a really raucous live Okla Said podcast session. I'm not endorsing anything. I'm saying there's not a little guard checking name tags at the door. That's all I'm saying.
There is now. They listen to this and they're like, just kidding. Here it is.
All right. Well, back to the chat.
Yes.
So.
Question one.
Question one.
Okay. I thought you were going to go somewhere there. When it comes to student discipline, would you consider yourself closer to the traditional, which is like no recess, ISS, suspension, or innovative forms? And I thought that was a good question, but then I was like, wait a minute, are we talking about discipline or consequences? And is there a difference? In your brain, is there a difference, Scott?
I don't know. This was a really good question. It made me think.
Okay.
Because you just can't let a student run amok in the classroom, right?
Right.
Like you can't do that. There has to be some sort of consequence, and if their behavior is in such a way as to result in a learning ceasing to occur, something has to happen.
Well, and so that's why I was questioning, and because we just did a whole lesson with my own kids, you know, here at the house on discipline. Mm-hmm. And like a gymnast is disciplined.
Right.
They have discipline in their lives. They go to the gym, they eat well, they, you know, work out. They're thinking about gymnastics outside of it. A football player, you know, there are lots of people who are disciplined or have discipline in their lives. Mm-hmm. And this seems like a consequence question versus a discipline question.
Well, I think when you're talking about education-y stuff, though, when you're talking about a student that's been a rascal pants, they get disciplined. And so I think there's sort of, I see what you're saying there, but I think there's also a couple different ways you could define that word.
Okay.
But I would say for most of my career, I was probably more along, because really I tried to have a lot of patience with students. And so if I did have an issue with a kid, then they had literally crossed over that line of being a rascal pants to being like, get the hell out.
Right, right. And I try to be that. I try to be the person that is easygoing, you know, offers a lot of grace, and then when it's gone too far, it's like, okay, right. That is enough, you know.
Right. Like, I had one instance, or really, I've only had a couple of students out of 20 years where I've been like, oh my gosh, please, an administrator, come and smote this child. Like, I really don't want to see them ever again the rest of the year, ever, ever. Like, smote him. And I know that there's sort of some regulations that prevent smoting, but let's ignore those for this guy.
Right.
And I've only had that happen a couple of times. So I think, you know, as it kind of came up in the chat, things like ISS or no recess, I think we just have to be careful with how those things are handled.
Right.
No recess for a fourth grader? That's a big deal.
That's
like,
huge.
They need to go run. ISS for a high school kid? I mean, sometimes they just sit in there. So is that the best use of time? I mean, I don't know. These are hard questions.
Right. And so I went with Cindy Johnson on this one. She is at Johnson Math on the Twitters. She says, I'm more of a preventative disciplinarian. I work hard to ensure that my students understand all expectations and are stopped quickly when they begin to make bad decisions. I seldom need detention, ISS, suspension based on behavior in my classroom. And so, like, she's controlling what she can control here, and I like that she tries to be on the preventative side versus, you know, reactionary.
Right, right. I went with Shane Sanders here. He's at edu_Sanders70. He said, ISS, ISI, and suspension are the last of my options when it comes to student discipline. Restorative justice and seeking to understand before being understood is my thing. And I know for some people, like, I'm teaching a class right now, and we're talking about different ways that you can manage students. And a lot of us did not grow up with restorative justice.
No. I mean, this is, I would say that that's fairly, like, in the last 2 years kind of conversation that I've heard.
Right. So whereas I'm like, no, kick them out of school for 3 days. They don't need to be there. well, that's sort of how I went through school. That was what the consequence for an action was.
Right.
Whereas trying to figure out, I like what Shane said here, because trying to understand what's going on, there's almost always something going on in the background that we don't see as a teacher, because we typically just see the student when they walk in the building. So, are you okay? Are you going to sneeze? Are you?
I just didn't know if you could hear the humans outside of this room.
So, podcast listener Aaron had a startled face and was covering her microphone with her hand, and I couldn't tell. Are you about to burp up some tea?
Question two.
Okay, moving on. Moving on. But I do hear, like, some cloth brushing the microphone, which I don't see cloth brushing the microphone, so that's interesting. Yeah, like right there when you moved. The little thing moved on your sweater, maybe? I don't know. We'll leave this in so that the listener can get some, you know, here's what happens in the background.
How about be still, Aaron?
Don't move at all. So question two. What is your biggest obstacle in moving toward more innovative forms of student discipline? I'll tell you the biggest obstacle. Creatures of habit.
Yeah, no, that's huge. I liked what David Burton had to say here. He is at Mr. Burton, MPS. He said, in addition to wrapping my own mind around change or shifts towards innovation discipline, discipline requires support, or at least understanding from teachers, parents, students, upper admin, unions, and other stakeholders. And I thought that was really great. And he was like, hey, I'm owning this. Like, I'm having a hard time here. I get that this needs to happen, but we all just need more conversations around this kind of stuff, you know?
Right. I really like that tweet too, because from the top to bottom, everybody needs to feel like they're supported in whatever decisions get made.
Right.
And so I think where you can really have some issues in schools is, you know, a teacher needs something to occur from the administration side regarding a consequence for an action or discipline or however you want to refer to it, and the student winds up back in their class 15 minutes later, and you're like... What just happened? Like, why are you back here? You know?
What's going on? Yeah, so, I thought you went somewhere to get a problem taken care of.
I didn't anticipate you coming back so quickly with a smile on your face.
I haven't lost my friend yet.
You know? And then that happened to me once. Like, this kid who I once molded was back in my class. I'm like, no, I can't deal with you today. Like, you'll have to go somewhere else. Go sit with the principal. And then he went off to the other side of the building and was messing around and doing other things that face. So I went with Joy Hoffmeister here. She said the biggest obstacles, lack of training for teachers, schools, and local boards. High mobility of families, students, which makes it extra difficult to connect and build relationships, lack of funding for counselors to serve school kids in schools and communities. And
yeah.
I mean, when was the last time that you heard of a counselor in a high school actually being used as a counselor instead of a test administrator or schedule fixer?
Right. They stand in and have many hats that they wear, those little counselors.
We had one crisis counselor at Emma Memorial for the almost 2,000 students there. Tell me how that's fair to anybody. It's not fair to her, and it's not fair to the students.
Right. The kids aren't getting anything, you know, that they need out of that.
Right.
All right. Well, question three. What are some alternative options to students missing recess, and why is the alternative better? Kaz Nelson, like, I wish she were closer. She's in a different side of the state. But I love everything that she's got. And she has, you know, called out this Great Expectations organization. So I like that. But she says, my students walk think tracks during recess. Also, I like to send home short restitution sheets that I gained from at greatexpectations.org. Training. I ask parents to complete it with their child so that they can have a conversation about the child's behavior. And I really like this. I like that it's something that people can take and maybe even try to implement. There were a lot of answers that revolved around we need to do this, but no why or how. And I really like that she gave a how in this.
Yeah, you're still getting the kids outside so they can do some walking in. And at the same time, you're able to address the whole situation of, hey, there was something that happened here that you need to consider.
Right.
So, hold on 1 second. I'm going to do a quick thing. And because it came up fast, and I'm going to do the thing. And here's the deal. All right. More behind the scenes, dear listener. Okay. I went with Mr. Burton, Mr. David Burton at Mr. Burton MPS. He said, missing recess may seem like a quote-unquote good punishment, but many discipline issues are linked with students not having an outlet for excess energy. I'm here to hear about alternative suggestions and their successes. He brings up a good point here, and there's been some sort of anecdotal-ish evidence for elementary school that indicates increasing recess raises test scores. So not just one in the afternoon, but like multiple times a day where the students are outside for like 25 minutes.
Right. If I see a kid like literally vibrating, bouncing off the walls, I challenge that kid to run 3 laps around the yard. You know, like, hey, let's go run and talk, you know.
Aaron's yard is big, BT Dubs.
Well, even if it's the schoolyard, you know, let's go run 3 laps around the yard and you know, see who can beat the next person or, you know, whatever. But getting some of that activity into their system because they're vibrating in the classroom.
Question four, what are some alternative options to in-school restriction or detention? Why is the alternative beneficial?
Very good question. I chose Aaron Baker because it made me think of something. And then whenever I commented back to him, he gave a response, and I would love to hear more of his, because I know he speaks out a lot about this kind of stuff. I want to hear more of what he would think is a solution, because, you know, he said, in-school restriction downplays the importance of direct instruction and plays right into the hands of education reformers. Anything besides out-of-school suspension is better than ISR. And so I had tweeted because it reminded me, I tweeted to him, there's this school in Austin, Texas, whenever I was down there visiting, and they had this whole in-school suspension area, but they had closed-circuit television in their in each of the schoolrooms. And so if a kiddo was in school suspension, they could pull up their laptop and not miss any of that direct instruction time. And I thought that that was really awesome. He wasn't a big fan of that. He said it sounded like a bunch of ideas, bad ideas rolled into one. And so I'm waiting on his response back to see, you know, why. But right. I thought that that was great as far as the kid still gets the direct instruction, because not necessarily a chemistry teacher sitting in ISS, you know, right. not necessarily an Algebra 2 teacher sitting in ISS. So I thought, you know, this way they're not missing that direct instruction time, and that that would be great. They're not getting behind, but still meeting that consequence that the school deemed necessary.
Yeah, that's a tricky wicket when you're trying to figure out, you know, how best to remove a student yet keep them in school.
Exactly.
I mean, that's hard. That's just hard. So Dina Rogers, who's at Dina_Rogers, she said reverse suspension. Ask parent to shadow the student for a part or all of the day. Builds relationships with parents, and either one, students behave better and we have a new expectation, or two, parents see what we see. And I like...
That's awesome.
I don't have a problem with that. But I know some teachers are like, oh, I really don't want parents in my room all the time.
I would beg for parents to be in my room all the time. Come see. And then it plays into... What was that? The thing... Was it Talanya had shared where we were doing the pineapple above the classroom? Come see my practices and tell me how I can get better.
Observe
type
me.
Thing. Yes, observe me. Yes. And so, like, let those parents fill out one of the forms, too. Like... Maybe I'm teaching in a way that that kid is becoming a knucklehead, you know, or I'm missing something else. Like, oh, kid was becoming a knucklehead, and that's all I saw, but I didn't see, you know, knucklehead to the right kicking, you know.
I mean, it's
said first knucklehead the whole time,
and that could help support too a need for smaller class sizes. I mean,
exactly.
So there's that.
Well, question five, children with adverse childhood experiences and children with parents of adverse childhood experience have been linked to an increased likelihood of behavioral disorders. I'm like, yeah, who needed to do that study? you know, anyway.
Things that make you go, but not really.
What can we do to proactively support these families in our classroom, school, or district? And I thought... Ken Ward had a great tweet here. Kenneth Ward is at Kenneth Ward on the Twitter. He said, I've always believed that we should host parenting classes for parents. Hard to get them to participate. We have to make sure that they are trying, that we are not trying to exclude them and their kids early on because they are hard. And I thought that was great. You know, I've probably said it 45 times over the last almost 2 years that we've been doing this, Scott, but Jeffrey Canada out of Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
He's like three-time TED Talk guy, like the official TED Talk, not
right.
TEDx.
Right.
He had the Harlem Children's Zone, and they had baby college, and they had parents come in, and in order to get the free diapers and formula and food and, you know, things for their kids, they had to fulfill requirement X, Y, and Z. And they were teaching parents how to play with their kids, read to their children, be a part of those children's lives. And it was hard. And he's like, I have some of these parents work 2 and 3 jobs, but we're open all the time to support them.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that Ken's tweet right there was kind of on that point. We've got to get parents more involved. And Twitter sphere, blow me up if you want to, but I do think it starts at home. We can't be expected to work miracles in schools when you don't even want to put up with your own kid.
I think there's something to be said for, I see what you're saying there, and I don't take that as a negative comment. I take that as a, you know, we only get kids for part of the time, and their family life that surrounds them also has an impact on how they are in school. And it's not just teachers that determine all that. It's a whole community effort. It's a whole community effort. School,
yes.
Parent, community, it all goes together. So that comes back to something that Kristen Ashley said in response. So she's the tweet that I picked, and she said parent involvement, here we go, which means including parents in a non-defense manner. So let them be the expert. Have them come to parent nights that are focused on their desire. Cooking, painting, relaxing. Have someone watch the kids in the common area. So for example,
do it.
What you could do is you could set up maybe one night a month where the Stucco kids are going to babysit students for 2 hours. So you bring your Stucco kids in. They'll do all the babysitting. Parents could come in and bring their younger children with them. Leave them there with the Stucco kids in the gym or wherever, and then go do the painting class or the cooking class or the Zumba sweat yoga, or, you know, or just whatever it is that they want to go do. And now they're in the building, and it's not focused on grades. It's not focused on a student behavior situation or any sort of meeting like that. It's just come use our space and get to know our folks.
No, I don't think we can only let our only interactions with parents be in the bad times.
Yeah. I mean, when I coached, one of the things that I saw that helped my team out the most was when the team could go do things that were not soccer related. So when they would have a team sleepover at somebody's house, when we would do a team dinner in, you know, like once a week together, we would eat a meal together. I mean, it just made a huge difference because they're getting to know each other off the soccer field, and that actually impacted the performance in a positive way on it. So any way that we can pull those parents in with things that they are interested in.
All right. Well, question six.
Question six. How can we reimagine the structures of our schools to proactively support student behavior, scheduling, physical spaces, instructional strategies, models, etc.? I have an idea.
Give it to me.
How many times have you driven past a school and it has the same formal structure as a prison?
Dude, so I hate this, but we drive by schools all the time, and my kids are like, "What is that?" And I'm like, "That's an elementary school."
Yeah.
And they're like, "No, yeah. I'm never going." And I feel so bad, you know, like I don't want to be hating on, but yeah, can we add some flowers or something to make it not look like a horrible place to go, or like, that's where you have to go if you want to get an education?
Oh, and the Deer Creek Middle School. So just to toot the district where my own kids go, is a school that sort of bucks that trend. And when you walk in, you don't feel like you're walking into this like super duper rigid formal institution that's designed to control the inmates, as it were. But the school itself is designed to look inviting. When you walk in, it's inviting. There's multiple colors. There's a waterfall. There's just some cool things in there. And it makes a huge difference.
It does. I mean, there is a school around the corner that I think that if it weren't for the floral arrangements outside and the kind of creative paint that they had done, mm-hmm. I think that it would look that way. But they've been really intentional about trying to change the look of their school. And I think that they had a lot of parents that came in and helped out with that project. But they're being really intentional about, let's make this look like a place people want to be.
Righto. Who'd you pick?
I went with Vicki Donnelly here. She says, educating staff and giving them essential tools to use. Two, educating students about appropriate behaviors more than we are. And I liked that, and it reminded me of, hey, let's work through some scenarios. You've got a kid that did this last week. How can we give Aaron better ideas of how to manage that student? You know, everybody. Let's, you know, village, let's all input on this.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I thought that was good.
I went with Sherry Gately here. She said, 7 class periods in a day is way too many for high school students. We need more flexibility with time and graduate requirements to get students more connected with school. Flexible seating / collaborative spaces all help. # design thinking and PBL that works across content areas.
I copied and, you know, was getting ready to paste, and then I saw you had already put that one in there, and I was like,
yeah, that's a good one. And the thing is too, and I've talked about this also, I just am not a fan of the way the high school day is designed.
Nope.
I think we could do better there.
Well, especially if we're trying to set them up, you know, not everybody's college bound, but mm-hmm. the ones that are, mm-hmm. hey, let's start arranging your week so that you're working on math Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or English, you know, one day a week, or however it's going to be set up for college. I think that 10th, 11th, and 12th grade year, if you're college bound, should start to mimic what a college schedule looks like. And if you're not, that's awesome. And we can you know, work around what the workday schedule is going to look like, or right. the tech, you know, school schedule is going to look like. I think it's a culture shock when kids leave high school and then they're all of a sudden thrown into a world that's completely different. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We can help them with that.
Right.
Anyways. Question 7. If a student lacks parental support, how can the school reimagine the support? That's a tough question. That was a really tough question.
Who is this guy giving these questions?
Yeah, right? Some guy working on his PhD or EdD or something?
Man, these hard thinkers. That's a good question, though, right? Because so many of our students need some of that.
Yeah. Well, I went with Melinda Parks here. She is at McCaps Parks, and she said, to be honest, all of our kids need teachers as mentors, no matter the level of parental engagement. If you aren't making those caring connections to your kids, I'm not saying you're doing it wrong, but...
but I'm saying you're doing it wrong.
She didn't say that at all. She just said, but... and I do agree. I in a perfect world, I've got parental involvement. In a perfect world, I can engage my parents, you know, at every level. Mm-hmm. But it is my job in that building, and even some outside of that building, to make those connections with those kids. That is my job.
Right.
Anyway.
So I chose Deborah Thorson. She's a DJ Thorson. She said, all students could use a mentor of some sort. I'm not sure how schools could help.
I'm sorry, we both very, very much picked the same kind of...
Yeah, but she said, I'm not sure how schools could help. Big brothers, big sisters can help these students a lot, but they have to be identified first. The younger, the better.
So, agreed.
So there you go. Question 8. What advice would you give a teacher that is struggling to reimagine student discipline?
Oh... So I went with Seth here. He answered his own question. He said, take a step back from the student and analyze the behavior. Look for the root cause and not how the behavior manifests. And I thought that that was pretty awesome. I thought it was impactful. And sometimes asking, why is, you know, this kid cutting up in my class or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. You got to find... the why,
right?
Before we can just problem solve in the classroom. I mean, have you seen the meme? And I think there's even a T-shirt like, "Hey there, I talk to everybody. Moving my desk is not going to help." You know, that's problem solving in the classroom, trying to move the kid to the right place. But let's talk about the why, and maybe we can make an impactful change.
Right. I mean, I have a daughter who likes to talk to folks, so it doesn't matter where you put her; she's going to have a best friend right next to her. Yeah. Yes. I went with Christy Cooper. She's at Chris Coop 80. She said, observe a teacher who's been successful with it and then make it our own. What works for me does not work with someone else. But you could get an idea. Because I've seen teachers, like, I am not, this may shock somebody, I'm not the most serious of people.
What?
Yeah, I know. So my classroom is not the most serious of classrooms. So if I'm in another classroom with somebody who's a bit more serious than me, runs their classroom in a bit more of a serious manner, what can I get from them? Well, I could get from them, how are they engaging their students? How's their classroom set up? How are they handling different situations? But then I can apply that to my personality, which is different from theirs.
So I had to go and observe several classrooms over the summer for one of my classes. And I saw this guy. It was so amazing. A, it was a male teacher. Kudos to any guy who wants to come and be a teacher, because I think a lot of times they think it's a woman's job. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but this guy was working with first and second grade kids, and he was using these strategies that were totes amazeballs. He did this like whisper into your hand strategy so that it wasn't a bunch of kids blurting out. And I thought it was so good. And the kids were all like whispering into their hands. And then he would have them throw it out of their hands all at the same time, and then they would all scream the answer. And you may not see that a kid doesn't know the answer every single time you use that method, but it's a really great way to handle blurts, you know, and it gives some time for kids to absorb the question fully and then come up with their answer. And I thought that that was so awesome. And I'd I would have never come up with that. It was observing another teacher right. who had an amazing, you know, successful trick up their sleeve. And I thought that was huge. I think we should all be observing teachers regularly.
Boom sauce. Sorry. We should. Being able to go observe other teachers and how they do things is critical to success.
I mean, how do you get better
yeah.
if you're the only person you ever see teaching?
Right.
You know?
You don't.
Anyway.
8B, I shall take it since it starts with an even number.
All right.
What is a strategy that could help them tomorrow?
Thank you for that question.
We both picked similar tweets.
I know. And I so when because I almost picked Aaron's here again, too. And then you had it. And so I was like, OK, it's all right. I'll find another strategy. And then I was like, oh, yay. Here's another one. And so both of you guys are amazing. Both of you men teachers again. Sorry. Is that horrible for me to call that out?
Terrible of you.
Is it so sexist? Bad.
Completely okay. sexist. Everybody knows that education is a women's field.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So, all right. Well, so David Burton,
yes.
Aaron Baker. I'll let you read Aaron's, obviously. Okay. You guys have amazing tweets here. And they're so easy to do.
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. David Burton says, stop, breathe, think. Repeat as needed, and don't feel bad about using your phone-a-friend lifeline to ask another teacher or administrator if the timing allows. And you know what? I would even say give that option to those kids. Stop, breathe, and think about it. Mm-hmm. Let them call home. Let them, you know, this is a strategy you can use with your students as well.
I had a situation one time where two kids of different races were sitting next to each other, and one of the students probably said something that he shouldn't have, and the other student took offense, stood up, flipped over a desk, and I thought it was going to be game on in the middle of class. So I just put my arm around the kid that was desk flipping, and I go, come on, man, let's go for a quick walk. And we just walked. We did one lap inside the school. We were out of the classroom maybe 4 minutes. By the time we got back in there, he had calmed down enough. He sat on the other side of the class. Nobody got into trouble. There weren't any later repercussions of, I'll meet me at such and so park after the school. But it gave him a chance to get out of that situation, calm himself down. I was like, wow, that worked great for all of us. So you've muted yourself, I think.
What Aaron Baker say?
Oh, there you go. Okay, you said, maybe you haven't muted yourself. What were you doing to me?
I did mute myself.
Oh, you did mute yourself.
I was worried about my shirt brushing in this microphone. Anyway, I'm trying to stay quiet over here.
Okay. So, Aaron Baker, who I am so glad he is back in, the chat. I've missed him.
I know him, and I feel like David Burton's been gone for a while, too, and I'm so glad he was back as well.
So Aaron Baker, he is at Baker Left. He said, stop yelling and breathe slowly.
Boom. Yeah. That's it. That's a strategy we should all use.
Yes.
That's all.
Is it hard to do that sometimes? Yes.
Sure.
Yes, because there's like 18 federal laws and 4 state ones that you want to violate sometimes. You know? But you can't just write a referral to an administrator that says, please kill this child. Like,
right.
You know? So, yeah, stop yelling. Not legal. And take a deep breath. Question 9.
Well, and take ownership.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, sometimes we don't want to take ownership for things that are happening in the room, and we want to be blameful. And I think just taking ownership of some of that is helpful as well.
Right.
Question 9. What is something that you're implementing in your classroom, school, or district, or community that is reimagining student discipline? Take a moment to brag. Mm-hmm. And so this is us getting to tell our story. I thought Vicki Donnelly said it great. She said, I try to take problem-solving approach, but I don't always do it. I'm educating myself about it and trying parts of it that I think might work. And I thought that was good. I really love the ownership of, mm-hmm. I might not be doing this all the way, but I'm really trying.
Right. Here. And she's indicating in there that there's potential issues that she's willing to sort through as part of the learning process. And I love that. So Seth hosted it, but I also picked a tweet from him, just like you did. And he said, I love that we are beginning student care teams, talking about academic, medical, physical, emotional needs. We can then pair some students with needed resources. I love our LPC program. And, you know, I remember when I was in kindergarten, my parents were going through a divorce, and I was a targeted student by the school. I don't know how they found out about it. I don't know if one of my parents told them, but once a week I got to go meet with my quote-unquote big kid, and I think his name was Todd. So, I mean, I still remember that. And he would just do different activities with me. It was just me and this big, it was like a sixth grader, and I was a kindergartner. I mean, I was like, wow, I get to hang out with this really cool big person, and they're doing stuff with me. Like, it was really impactful for me. I still remember some of that.
That's really cool.
So name someone from Oklahoma Ed that you would like to shadow for a day and tell us why.
I didn't answer this question, but can I pick many?
It's hard to pick one, isn't it?
It really is. Especially in the Oklahoma Ed hashtag, I feel like I could pick almost all of you to go shadow and learn something from. That's a really difficult question.
That was super hard, and that's why I went with Jack Reed. He's at JL Reed 2011. He said, I could learn so much from everyone in Oklahoma Ed. To follow anyone would be an honor and an experience worth the effort. And I would say, you know, as part of our professional development-y sort of stuff, having the opportunity to go twice a year to shadow teachers in another building would be huge.
Yeah. Huge. I mean, huge. Huge. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, boom sauce tweet time.
Boom sauce. Hashtag.
Stephen Pyle, you are awesome.
I think this is his first boom sauce.
Yeah. He says, the best discipline plan is a great lesson plan. Train that teacher to engage students. And I was like, yes.
Sonic
yes.
boom sauce.
I loved it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I mean, I really loved it.
Because really, if you can put together a really robust lesson plan, you do minimize, not saying they'll all be perfect angels, but you minimize the places where the kids can run off the rails.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I went with Sherry Gately here. She said, this is an answer to question 8. Question 8 said, what advice would you give a teacher that is struggling to reimagine student discipline? So she said, as with everything in education, I would ask them, what would you want for your own child? We should approach every decision with the idea that if it's not good enough for our kid, then it's not good enough for any. And after I had my own kids, I started thinking that exact same thing. Would I want my son sitting in my classroom right now? Yes or no?
I know. I'm not calling out anybody in particular, I hope. I am, but I'm not going to say their name. So I went and observed my own kiddo in her sport. How's that?
Okay.
So I've got two kids. They're both in sports. I went and observed my own kiddo in her sport, and she was doing wall sits. She had a 4-minute wall sit at 8 years old. And I was like starting to get a little bit fussy because I don't get to see what's going on. And I see that nobody else is doing wall sits, and that also there are kids that don't have the same skill that mine was asked to sit on the wall for. And I was kind of like, okay.
She was the only one on the wall?
She was the only one on the wall. And
she was over there for 4 minutes?
4 minutes. Oh. So she's a gymnast. She has the ability to sit on the wall for, I mean, probably 8 to 10 minutes. Like, she's got some muscle. So 4 minutes, in the grand scheme of things, was not that long.
But
I did see Coach continually looking over there to make sure. And at the end of it, I went down and asked Coach. I was like, hey, you know, what happened over there? I didn't want to, like, call the coach out or anything like that, because they know how to coach and I, you know, don't. So she was like, honestly, your kiddo was having such a tough night. She was being careless with her skills. She was going to hurt herself, and she needed to be broken so that we could build her up.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, you know what? Okay. And I don't know if that can translate to the classroom. I don't necessarily want to break kids, but sometimes breaking their own mental walls that so that you can build them up? Am I crazy in that that could work here, or should it not ever work here?
I don't know. I'm sure there's some way that we could sort that out, but I'm not sure what it would look like.
And it's probably its own podcast, yeah.
Yeah, probably.
But sometimes an enduring question.
Yeah, maybe that is, because you know, sometimes these kids shoot themselves in the foot because they are being careless or not doing something that they're totally 100% capable of doing. Because
right.
They're being goobers, you know, because they're being
mindset
kids.
Mindset and yeah. All kinds, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, so I was like, wow, well, thank you for doing that. And I was wrong in my anger. I really was sitting up there watching this, and I was like, oh my word. Mm. Anyway, so it was not about the skill. It wasn't about anything. It was about the attitude that was revolving around it.
Right.
Anyway.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. So what's coming up next
Coming up next is Shawnee Sup.
Sup.
Shawnee Sup.
She's probably like, when you guys please stop.
It's Dr. April Grace, and she's the superintendent of Shawnee Public Schools. And her Twitter handle's at Shawnee Sup. She's going to be talking about the soul of leadership.
This is perfect timing.
So we've had some leadership chats here recently. Sometimes we go through phases, have you noticed, you know? And I think we're in a leadership-y sort of phase.
That's okay. And I think that it's still something that every educator can take part in.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's one area where, as educators, we struggle. Because you know what? We're all leaders in some fact. We have to be. Because somebody's looking up to us. And usually it's the students. So we have to lead. But
right.
Oftentimes we don't think of ourselves as... We think of ourselves as just teachers. And none of us, none of you are just a teacher. You're so much more than that. You are all leaders. You're all individuals. You all have different gifts that go to different ways. I mean, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. Yep. Can't wait.
All right.
So that's going to be on Sunday. Am I gonna have to bleep that? Did you just drop off a potty word?
No, I didn't. I said, all right, like we were going to end.
I thought you said something else after I said that the Twitter chat is every Sunday at 8 yeah. Chicago time.
8 Central Daylight Time.
Standard time? Chicago time?
Chicago time.
Todd, help. Help us, Todd Gregg. You're our only hope.
All right.
All right, educators, you know what to do. Go out and dominate the world.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
You want to say it again?
You ready for me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I was typing it, so I didn't forget.
All right.
I wasn't being that apathetic.
I thought, well, I was like, all right, educators. It sounds like Stein reading my...
I can read it that way if you want.
No, give it to us.
Okay. All right, educators, you know what to do. Go out and dominate the world.
This is for real.
People, go away. I'm recording. I'm not always a cool guy, but when I am...
But when I am, my hair looks like this.
We're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, okay.